Welcome to Conservative News Briefs with JD and Tammy Rucker, the show where we analyze stories that American patriots need to hear and frame them from a conservative perspective. Sit back, grab a cup of coffee, and enjoy.
So today I am joined by one of the illustrious and wonderful and very successful hosts of a show for Freedom First Network, Bob and Eric Save America, every Saturday at 9 a.m. Pacific or noon if you live on the right coast. Now, Eric, for those who don't know, Eric is, I generally don't like lawyers. Nothing against them as people.
Oh, I don't like
them. You're one of the few lawyers I do like. You are a lawyer that I like, so
I appreciate that.
Yeah, well, because you're actually fighting. Stuff that I heard you do over the years has been absolutely amazing. So, but we'll talk about your story later. I want to talk about Kamala Harris. I'm sorry, Kamala. It's not Kamala. Kamala. It's Kamala Harris. I don't want the left to be jumping on as if that's somehow racist to mispronounce somebody's name. You posted a tweet, and I'm going to pull it up here, and let's just go ahead and listen to it briefly, and then I want to get your insights. Okay. So here we go. Oh, wait, I need to make sure that we got sound on, so I'm going to actually get rid of this one. Let's unshare it and then reshare it. We want to do this the right way. Your buddy, your co-host Bob, sent me this. Hey, Mr. Dunlap, he sent me this new computer, and it's so much fun to have this, I will admit. But okay, share audio, boom.
Yeah, for all the folks, Bob Dunlap is your man for repurposed computers. If you need a computer, you contact Bob Dunlap. That's his business. He's very good at it.
He is, and my wife, she already commandeered it. I'm going to have to get another one from him. She already said, I'm taking that one. So, nice. But here we go. This is Kamala Harris talking to, being interviewed by Stephen Colbert about Black Lives Matter riots.
And we should not.
Clear that I know that there are protests still happening in major cities across the United States. I'm just not seeing the reporting on it that I had.
That's right.
For the first few weeks.
That's right. But they're not going to stop. They're not going to stop. And this is a movement. I'm telling you, they're not going to stop. And everyone beware. Because they're not going to stop. They're not going to stop before Election Day in November, and they're not going to stop after Election Day. And that should be, everyone should take note of that on both levels. That this isn't, they're not going to let up, and they should not, and we should not.
What does that mean? Both levels, on both levels. What does that
mean? You know what? There's the higher level people like Kamala Harris and Joe Biden, and there's our level, I guess.
Like yours and mine. The proletariat.
Pretty much. That's exactly. I don't think she meant to let that slip out. She was probably talking about both sides of the fence, but, you know, she's not very good at talking sometimes. So, you know, up until that last part, I actually didn't disagree with her. She said it's not going to stop before the election or even after the election. I agree. What do you think?
Bob and I have been saying that for a long time. In fact, Bob and I have, to pat ourselves on the back, we've predicted a lot of this. And we've been doing our show since September of 2019. We were with New Right Network. It was formerly Weekly Wrap Up with Bob and Eric. And I've been with your illustrious network very happily for 7 weeks. And I just want to say that we have just reached our all-time high viewership on last week's episode. To my good friend Cat Turd, you hold the record previously. I'm sorry you've been eclipsed, but we're going to get you back on, and we're going to try to get you back to number one spot. We've been saying that for a long time. We predicted civil unrest back when everything was quote unquote calm, back in the pre-COVID era, which now, I mean, impeachment, Ukraine, all that stuff seems, I miss those days. I long for those days where all we had to deal with was an impeachment. But lo and behold, we're in a civil war. To say that we're on the verge or it's digital is a bunch of nonsense, man. Kyle Rittenhouse, look at what's going on. This is taken to the street. Now, it hasn't taken to the street in a sense of like rival militaries, at least the military hasn't involved itself yet, but you have violent factions on the right and left fighting each other in the street. So we've been saying that for a long time. And Kamala, however the hell you pronounce that name, she is 100% right. We've been saying it for a long time. These are going to go on. Regardless of what happens election night, we have been saying for a very long time to be very fearful and cautiously so about election night, that we're going to see. Look at what they'll do over a guy like Jacob Blake, a convicted felon sex offender who has a warrant out, who goes to get a knife and the cop shoots him and they burn down the city and they loot Minneapolis. What do you think they're going to do when what now looks like the inevitable reelection of Donald Trump occurs?
It's going to blow up, absolutely blow up. And you know, Kamala Harris, she did say there was, she actually, it's funny because I thought, okay, so this is the big, this is the pivot. Joe Biden started to pivot the other day. You had Don Lemon start to pivot to where, you know, for weeks, for literally months, they've been essentially ignoring the Black Lives Matter and Antifa riots that are happening across the country, the burning down of things. They've been calling them peaceful protests. CNN still is calling them peaceful protests. But Joe Biden said, you know what, you guys need to calm down. You know, let's not get violent, essentially. It was really awkwardly worded, but he was kind of doing the right thing. So I thought when Kamala Harris, she said, you know, and beware, she told people to beware. It's like, okay, so this is it. This is the pivot. She's about to speak out against Black Lives Matter, as she should, as everybody should. And I'm not talking about Black Lives Matter, the concept of, you know, if you guys want to have a debate over systemic racism, I'd love to have that debate with you, because I don't think that it actually exists. But either way, you know, you're entitled to that opinion. What you're not entitled to do is burn down a building, burn down cars, hurt people. Okay, you're not entitled to just do that because you're angry over something that may or may not exist. So when she said beware, I'm like, okay, great. She's going to come out and she's going to speak out against it. Then she ends off by saying, she says, they're not going to let up, nor should they. The vice presidential candidate of the United States of America for the Democratic Party is saying that these riots, the burning down, they're not going to let up. And she doesn't think that they should let up, not before the election, not after the election. She's calling for this, a continuation of this insurrection. What do you say, Eric?
What do I say? Well, I say the language they're using is very, it's very careful language. They're choosing their words. Look, this mirrors the 1930s in Germany to a T. It mirrors the 1930s with the rioters being the Nazi brown shirts, you know, accosting people in restaurants and saying, you will raise your fist. I mean, it's the same as giving the Heil Hitler. So what they're doing right now is they're using very careful language to what they're doing. I mean, read 1984. I mean, this is all wrong think and, you know, carefully cultivating the words they're using to turn the narrative. They're not rioters. They're peaceful protesters. It's not burning down a building. It's not accosting someone. It's confronting oppression. It's rage. It's well-founded. So what they've done is they've changed the definition of peaceful. And look at what's going on with this young man, Kyle Rittenhouse. And I have thrown my hat out there and I say, look, I'm happy to help. As a criminal defense attorney, I will do whatever I can. And I have been in contact with Michelle Malkin. I've been in contact with the people who are working with Lynn Wood. And I am, you know, ready to do what is necessary. But what they are doing is they're taking the language to cover up what it is they're doing, that it's not rioting, it's protesting, peaceful protesters, and CNN and the mainstream media is just as complicit in it. But the problem is that their definition of peaceful includes burning down buildings, includes destruction of property. AOC said it herself. They're just getting bread because they're hungry. The BLM organizer in Chicago said they're allowed to loot because of what you, America, have looted from them. This is 400 years of systemic oppression, and if they want to take a $1,200 purse, they can do it. So now it puts us on the defense of what is self-defense. If I have 15 people charging at me wielding skateboards, are they armed attackers or no? Are they peaceful protesters? So if I pull my gun and you bet your ass I have many and I fire in self-defense, am I going to be charged? Am I going to be arrested?
So that's the precedent that they're trying to set.
Towards reality, and nobody knows which way is up and which way is down. I mean, this is dystopian.
It absolutely is. They're trying to distort what the Second Amendment means, and specifically what individual laws in states mean regarding guns. You know, I had a lot of people that were attacking me based on, oh, sure, he's standing his ground 22 miles away from another state. They said nobody was saying stand your ground. This wasn't about stand your ground. This is just straight up, he's getting attacked. And you mentioned a skateboard. What you didn't mention was the gentleman that he shot in the arm. Such a gruesome shot, right? The gentleman he shot in the arm. That arm that he shot on the other end of it was a Glock 9mm.
I saw that. I tweeted that out, and I just got a, you know, shooter to shooter. Give Kyle Rittenhouse some credit. That was an amazing shot under pressure with multiple.
Oh, man,
the guy's on you. You're sitting seated position with your AR and to get that shot off. And I don't think that was a lucky shot. He was, I think he was trying to shoot the gun out of the guy's hand and he hit the guy in the elbow. And then he still manages to sweep the rifle around to protect his perimeter. I mean, just, you know, as a shooter, that was a good shot.
17-year-old, I'm thinking I couldn't have done that when I was 17.
Since I was 17, I'm 38. I don't think I could do that with my AK. But in any event, no, you're absolutely right. Yeah, it wasn't just a skateboard. You had a guy with a gun in his hand. And now it's interesting, as all the videos are coming out, we're gathering all the social media and all the evidence because everybody's got a camera, which, you know, thank God the Eye in the Sky watches us all. I would think if I were representing him, and he's going to have a lawyer up in Wisconsin, but he's going to have a lot of lawyers who are advising and helping him, I would be taking this to the DA because the arrest warrant likely was just issued by the police department. I don't know if the actual state attorney from that warrant. Police on their own initiative can issue a warrant. You know, they're out to get someone. They just need to get the warrant signed, which is on probable cause. So if the police department issued the warrant and it's now being presented to a prosecutor to make a filing decision or take to a grand jury, if I'm the filing prosecutor and I'm looking at the evidence, you can't file on that. And the fact that he traveled with a firearm, that's not evidence of premeditation. That's he's going out there because there's a riot and he's volunteering to protect property because the police won't do anything. And right. These are absolute foreseeable consequences of defund the police and neutering. I am neutering. Someone said it last night at the RSC. It's a beautiful term, neutering the police, taking away their ability to do their job. And you've seen it for, you know, actually, I think the first night in like 92 nights, it didn't happen in Portland.
Right. Well, it's funny. Yes, neutering is a great word. I've been using that for months. Somebody stole it from me. I'm not going to say who. All right. I'm not going to say who, but I know that you know, I should have trademarked it. Should have gone to Webster. you'd mentioned the aspect, you know, the legal aspect of it. He's being charged, or not, he hasn't been charged yet, but he was arrested on a warrant for suspicion of first degree murder, which, you know, I put out a story that went kind of viral, got over. Over 100,000 views, where basically I said, it's first degree murder is ludicrous, you know, a ludicrous charge. And so I want to tell you a quick tale of two different stories from mainstream media. The first one is one we would expect. It's from Washington Post. And the story basically said, you know, because it was insinuating that it was noting that the first person that he killed, the first person who was chasing him, all they did was throw a paper bag at him. Okay, and that's what you get to see in the video. You get to see him throwing some kind of item that doesn't go very far and kind of swerves off, and it does look like that. The second piece, though, and that was total gaslighting by the Washington Post, because they didn't tell you what the second piece of mainstream media reporting was. And this, oddly enough, shockingly to me, came from the New York Times. The New York Times did a comprehensive review of hundreds of hours of videos they were able to find online and, you know, through Stitch and through all these various streaming services, Facebook, Periscope, everywhere, YouTube. They got a team together and they reviewed all the footage and they put together a comprehensive timeline. And in this timeline, first and foremost, you know, I haven't said anything good about the New York Times since like 1987. All right. I will say something good about the New York Times. This was an honest report. They just stated the facts as they should as a newspaper. They stated the facts, and those facts, even though they totally support Kyle and his timeline from a self-defense perspective, they reported it honestly. So kudos to New York Times. Probably the last time we'll be able to do that for at least another few years. But the second thing they did note is that what nobody else is saying is that you can clearly see in the video and hear in the audio that about 30 yards behind him, after, while he's still running away, okay, he's still just trying, he's running away from the people that are chasing him, not trying to shoot at them, running away from them. Somebody behind him, 30 yards, not the guy that was immediately chasing him, not the guy that he killed, but behind him was another guy who aimed his gun at about, you know, they say he aimed it in the sky. It was really more of a, like, it was a very poor choice to fire in that direction. But he kind of aimed at about a 75 degree angle, you know, upwards. He fired a shot. Now, if I'm being chased, okay, by people, I got a gun, I'm being chased, and I hear a shot, you turn around and you try to shoot whoever's trying to shoot you. That's just the natural reaction of self-defense. Now, you're an attorney. If I'm making that case, you know, I hear a shot behind me, I turn. No, I didn't shoot the shooter. But I shoot the guy that's coming at me aggressively, that's been chasing me the entire time, and he's like on top of me at this moment. Is my shot, you know, do you make that case to a jury, even to a prosecutor and say, look, this is clearly self-defense.
The way I practice, and one thing I'm known for, is I used to be a prosecutor. So I know how the office works. I know the ins and outs. I know where, how the sausage is made, so to speak. So when you come to me, when you're a client, you say, I got arrested yesterday and your arraignment is in 21 to 30 days. What I'm going to do is I'm not just going to sit back and wait for a filing decision. I get involved in that process. I get involved. I contact the prosecutor. I submit defense witness lists. I do all that up front. I say, take a look at my evidence, and hand to God, a good number of cases, when the evidence isn't on your side, I'm able to get a no info or no action or no file, whatever county I'm in, whatever they call it. I'm able to do that a lot of the time just by giving it to a prosecutor up front, because I can tell you, as a former prosecutor, it is a lot easier for a prosecutor to dismiss a case in the pre-file than it is for a grand jury to indict, or a prosecutor to file, hand off to a trial division prosecutor, and then that prosecutor to second guess the filing prosecutor's decision. It's kind of like office politics doesn't dictate that kind of outcome. So you do it early on where the prosecutor has a lot more discretion. They look at it. What I would do is, having filed cases, having been a prosecutor, you want to put everything in sequence. What happened? We see little videos, but where does it start? What does it happen? Where I start, I see there's an altercation between Rittenhouse and this guy who turned out to be the 36-year-old registered sex offender at, it looks like, a gas station. He's like, shoot me. And I'm not going to use the same word he did, but he said the N-word, a little short white guy. No one seems to be making an issue about that. And then it looks like from there, that's where the chase began. So Rittenhouse is running. I do see footage. I saw some still footage of someone coming in, like stomping him or kicking him. I saw someone with a skateboard up. I think that was the 26-year-old gentleman who was shot. There's the guy with the gun who was shot in the arm. So what you have to consider is, self-defense entirely is based on perception. And it's based on a reasonable person standard. Would a reasonable person under those circumstances have acted the way they did? And a threat does not have to be an actual threat under self-defense law. It has to be a perceived threat by the victim. So if you come at me, if you and I are having an altercation, and you start storming at me, and you reach your hand into your waist and say, I'm going to F you up, and I draw my gun and I shoot you, and maybe you had a phone or a pen or something, I can still be acquitted or not even arrested, because I had a reasonable fear that you were armed, you had verbalized it, you had taken steps, you had made gestures where I thought, oh my God, he's going to pull a gun. And I was reasonable in my belief to do that. So the fact that he was being pursued by a mob, the fact that he had knowledge, as we all do, every American, of what these mobs are capable of. We've been watching violent mobs for 90 days. They'd already threatened him. They were chasing him. They were armed. There was someone in the crowd fired a shot. Were his actions reasonable? And if it does go to a jury, that's what a jury is going to be asked. Were his actions reasonable given the circumstances? Would a reasonable person in that situation have acted the same way? And I suggest to you, ladies and gentlemen of the jury, that Kyle Rittenhouse acted as a reasonable person did. And the evidence in this case supports only one verdict, and that's a verdict of not guilty.
Case dismissed. So let's circle back around real quick to Kamala Harris. And I want to disagree with one thing that you said just now. Very impressive case, by the way. One thing that you said is that everybody knows what these mobs can do. No, they don't. I would say we're getting to that point where probably 60 or 70% of Americans know what these mobs can do. But if they're watching CNN, they're learning about fiery but mostly peaceful protests. Okay, yeah, there was a building burned. It was probably an accident. Nothing to see here. These guys just want to stop racism. Why would you be against stopping racism? What are you a bigot? You must be a bigot if you don't agree with stopping racism. Oh, don't mind the rioters in the background. There's nothing to see here. Don't look at the anarchists behind the curtain.
No.
So we're at about, I would say, somewhere between, hopefully, I pray that we're at that 60 to 70% range. It might be fewer, because we cannot trust, where people are getting their news. If they're getting it from the internet, they're getting it from CNN, MSNBC, places like that. They may not know what the Black Lives Matter and Antifa and anarcho-communists are capable of doing, and that they're actually burning these. They hear the news that, sure, there's things that are burning down, but they don't know the circumstances. They're still under this impression, and this is why I want to circle back to Kamala Harris. They're still under the impression, as she said multiple times just now, that this is a movement, that this isn't a revolution. You ask the people who are doing this, this isn't a movement, this is a revolution, okay? They call each other comrades. They are trying to literally burn down the United States of America with the goal of, they know that if they are to achieve their goal of establishing a neo-Marxist society, the only way that they could possibly do that is if they burn it all down. Okay, and try to rebuild it from there. Now, you look at the puppet masters who know the master plan. They're looking at it from the perspective of, okay, burn it all down, and if we can build up this anarcho, they use anarcho-communism to get to neo-Marxism. If we can build up this neo-Marxist society, great. If not, no big deal. At least America's burned down, and we can progress with neo-Marxism around the rest of the world with America out of the way. Kamala Harris's statements in support of this movement, what does that disqualify her? I'm not saying disqualify her from as far as qualifications to be vice president, but should that statement alone be something that every American wakes up and says, no, we cannot support rioting and burning the buildings and businesses and cars and property of innocent people, or going around chasing people or stalking people or trying to beat up senators after just because they were at the White House? Oh, I'm starting to get a headache just thinking about how annoying this is. The question for you is, should Kamala Harris step down based upon that singular comment?
JD, you're making a bold assumption that we're all living in the same reality. We are not living in the same reality. All the rules, you know, this is why I've been telling people, forget 2016. This is unlike anything you've ever seen in your lifetime, as long as every human being in this planet has been alive. Maybe it was like this in the 1860s. I can't speak to that, but I'll tell you how it is right now. We have no frame of reference, no frame of reference whatsoever. Should it be disqualifying? Yeah, but shoulda, woulda, coulda. We don't live in that era anymore. 50%, at least 50% of this country, maybe a little bit less. I think actually a little bit less. They're going to side with her. They're going to side with CNN. They're going to say, oh yeah, fiery, but mostly peaceful. Yeah, okay, a little bit of fire here and there. I swear to God, if CNN existed in April of 1912, the Titanic would have been a little light chop, but otherwise successful voyage. I mean, half the people did make it. So, 50% success rate, not bad.
No, not bad at all. That is that's an excellent way to put it. Eric, you are on Bob and Eric Saves America every Saturday at noon Saturday. Eastern. This weekend, yes, you're part of a bigger program. Tell us who you have as your guest on Saturday at noon Eastern.
We are delighted, Bob and I are delighted, and don't forget Rampage. We've brought him on as a pretty much a permanent fixture, and he's just added a whole new element to the
Love
show.
He
says the things that Bob and I sometimes won't, and there's no filter on Rampage, which is why we love him. We are bringing on Juanita Broderick. I just spoke to her this morning. She is confirmed, ready to go. And Juanita, she's been on a lot of shows, but she hasn't been on a show like ours where we don't care if we get sued. So we're going to talk about it all. We're going to talk about the Clintons in a way you're not going to hear on Hannity. We're going to go there. We're going to talk about it. We're going to try to figure out where the bodies are buried. 83, as far as I know, but she may have a different account. So we're really going to go there. And just excited. Tomorrow at 12 noon, we're going to be streaming Periscope, Facebook Live, YouTube. And you can always check us out the next day. We're on all the podcast formats, iTunes, Spotify, Google Podcasts. We always tweet it out. We always have the live link going. And then you'll always be able to check the replay. And we are very excited to have Juanita Broderick tomorrow.
Nice. Well, guess who I got. By the way, if we do get sued because of this, I know a good lawyer.
I do. Well, here's the thing. Let me tell you something. I actually, the Clintons will never sue anybody, because if they sue us, it's going to be for slander. Mm-hmm. And the problem with that is that truth is a defense. So first of all, I'm not as wealthy as Bill and Hillary. I don't know what they'd expect to get from me. But if they do sue me, I have the right of discovery, which means I get to take their depositions. I get to sit Hillary down, sit Bill down under oath and say, how many people you killed? They're never going to do it. They're never going to do it. Truth is a defense. We are lawsuit proof here at Bob and Eric Save America. And we will ask the questions that you're not going to hear on Fox News.
We're getting a couple of guests coming up in the next month that I think you'd be interested in getting on your show as well. We've got Antonio Sabato Jr., who spoke at the 2016 Republican National Convention. I'm in contact with his PR people. We're trying to get them on multiple shows because I think he's stellar. I don't know if you saw his speech at the 2016 RNC, but it was fabulous.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, we're talking to the recently elected chair of the Texas GOP Lieutenant Colonel Alan West. We've got him. We're on with his people trying to figure out a time in September to have him on. We've got the dude. I don't know if you've ever had David Dudenhofer on your show. You should. This guy is running against, he just won his primary up in Michigan. He's running against against Rashida Tlaib. And my brother just popped on. How funny is this? I haven't talked to my brother in forever. And there he is. I'll call you, bro. My brother. Yeah, it's great stuff. And speaking of brother, did you hear what he said last night about Robert Trump? That was great. Very touching. Touching moment of the RNC. And then we've got, are you familiar with Ashley St. Clair?
Oh yeah, I know Ashley St. Clair, and you know we, you know, Bob and I are working on getting some big guests. We're in talks with Dinesh D'Souza.
We're just dang it,
we just trumped me, man. We're talking to her publicist. We've been talking to her, and we're reaching out to other folks to try to get them on. And obviously, with this Kyle Rittenhouse thing, I think this is going to be a big. I don't like to use the phrase test case, but I think, you know, we look at the McCloskeys in St. Louis. We look at here. Being safe, self-defense is not a legal right. That is a human, God-ordained right that you and I have the absolute right in a state of nature to preserve life. It is instinctive. We want to stay alive. That's a good thing. Every day, every action you take is in furtherance of staying alive. And normally, in a social contract, we rely on police and government to offer some level of protection because I'm a political science guy. I'm a Hobbesian. I believe that government and order is the only thing that keeps us from eating each other. That if we resort to a state of nature, it's going to be Mad Max, which we've seen for the last 90 days. You want a lesson in social studies? Holy shit. Just look at what's going on in the country. So without that, when you neuter, great word, when you neuter the police, when you neuter government and you pull back that protection, what else do we have? I'm not going to be a victim. I've worked too damn hard. I've sacrificed too damn much to let my house, my belongings, my life, my family be in jeopardy. And I'm an armed American. And hey, at the end of the day, I'd rather be judged by a jury than judged by my Lord and Savior right now at this point in my young life. So I will protect myself as I expect every American to. So it's frightening to see government effectively letting these rioters just go and have their space to destroy the people like the McCloskeys who are being prosecuted in St. Louis and this young man, Kyle Rittenhouse, who's facing, I mean, they're going to try him as an adult. Now, they can't execute him because he's under 18, but he's facing life in prison. Right. He's 17 years old. He's facing the rest of his life in prison. And I don't know how it is in Wisconsin, but in the state of Florida, if you're found guilty of first-degree murder, it is a mandatory day-for-day life sentence. You will leave prison in a pine box. We don't have parole or early release here.
Yeah, and you said you don't know if it was a test case. I think in many ways it is, only because if this – what we've seen is, and we've seen this in Portland, we've seen this in many cities, especially obviously left-leaning cities, but to some extent many even more conservative cities, we're seeing the response to the Black Lives Matter riots, protests, and all that stuff has been kind of a litmus test for what is going to be acceptable, what's going to be tolerated, what's going to, you know, I mean, like in Portland, they went and the district attorney for the county came out and said, look, you know, if they're going to arrest these rioters and anybody that they arrest, we're not going to prosecute. We're going to set them free. So police, state police said, okay, well, you guys called us in for help and we're arresting people. And then we're seeing the same people we arrest attacking us the next day. No, thanks. We're out, you know? So yeah, I think that this is going to be, to some extent, a litmus test of what is the appetite for both the left and the right in regards to the ability to defend oneself. Because the left is still going to be pushing for this, not because they care about whether or not this kid was right or wrong in self-defense. They're going to go after the fact that he came and tried to defend his property. They're going to be throwing out things, you know, people shouldn't die over inanimate objects. They've got insurance. They're this, that, or the other, you know.
So, you know, after him, no matter what.
No, but that's the point I'm trying to make is that they're trying to establish the law is being – and I may be naive and when I say this, that it seems to be worse today than it was just any other time in my life, but I believe the law is being manipulated for the sake of politics. And that's something that number one, that goes against the Constitution, wholeheartedly against the Constitution. There is no room for political influence in our legal system. Okay, but number two, it's just stupid because that means that guess who wins? Mobs win. When mobs can influence how the law is enforced and even whether the law is enforced, then what's to stop them from continuing to be mobs, continuing to escalate, to take it up to the next level and the next level? Oh, and then they finally get stopped as they're bombing buildings with people in it. Okay, so now we know what our ceiling is. As long as the buildings don't have people in them, then we can still blow them up. You see what I'm saying?
Let me pose this. I'm not trying to be the doomsayer, but what happens when they come into your neighborhood and they're trying to break into your home and they're trying to set fire to your home because your home reflects white privilege and systemic oppression? And they're not trying to hurt you. They're trying to harm your property. Even though the law says you have a right, an absolute right in your own home, you know, what about when that happens? And you know, everyone's, oh, don't go there. That's never going to happen. Well, we didn't think this was going to happen a month ago, 2 months ago, 3 months ago. Anything is possible. This mob has been emboldened by a lack of government intervention. And I'm, you know, look, I don't like a powerful federal government, but I would like to see the Insurrection Act at this point. I would, because otherwise, if you don't get the military down here to quell the mob, then you're going to have guys like me. And I, and when you told me you wanted me to come on the show, I went and put on my very special hat, 2A, 1791. Look at A, two machine guns, okay? We don't mess around. This is the United States of America, and we are armed, and we will protect ourselves.
As we should, and this is the thing. You know, I had a debate. I said I wasn't going to call it out, but I'm going to go ahead and call it out. I had a debate with a very leftist podcaster, had me on his show, and you know, we were talking about a lot of things, including the Second Amendment. And my argument for the Second Amendment wasn't one of you know, it wasn't like, not no offense to Alex Jones, but it wasn't like, come and take my, you know, you come and it'll be 1776 all over. It wasn't, I was just very like, look, you know, if you can convince me that you can take every single gun in existence in the United States, if you can convince me beyond a reasonable doubt that that's possible, then let's have a discussion. You're still not going to convince me that it's right, but at least you have a point that you can make with gun control. Until you get to that point where you can be sure that people who have these weapons, such as the gentleman who got shot, okay, by Kyle Rittenhouse, the one who had the Glock 9mm in his hand, he had that illegally. Okay.
Yeah.
So, you know, until you can convince me that the bad guys aren't going to have guns, then you have absolutely nothing you can say to me to give me a reason why you should take away my guns as a law-abiding American citizen. That was basically the only argument I made, but I made it in from different angles, and I kept going back to that one because there was no counter to that. You know, if you take away all the guns, are you going to be able to take away the guns from the criminals? No. Okay. So you're going to disarm the law-abiding citizens, and you're going to let the criminals have guns. It's like, well, I guess that's what it's going to have to be. Isn't that kind of like what's happening in Chicago? Yes. Is crime dropping in Chicago? Silence.
No.
Silence, silence. Point I'm trying to make is, and I had to wrap back around all the way, that show didn't get aired. That's the second one, second time I've debated a leftist where they decided that they didn't want to air the show. And I'm not a good debater. I can barely speak, okay? I'm kind of a dumb guy. I'm not a lawyer, but I do believe in, you know, our rights. And I believe in them passionately. And the reason I bring this up is, folks, we are in a war. And this war is coming our way. Whether we can't stop it from coming. All we can do is prepare for it when it comes. If and when, assuming that President Trump wins, then what we're seeing today is going to be amplified tenfold, 100-fold, 1,000-fold. It's going to get bad. We have to be ready for that. We have to be ready. And you mentioned the troops, you know, sending troops in the cities. We don't want to see that happen, but it's going to have to happen, especially around election time, because otherwise, you know, cities will not be able to operate. They will be essentially destroyed. What we're seeing in Kenosha, a city of 28 square miles and 100,000 people, it will happen everywhere across the United States. Republican, Democrat, doesn't matter, because they'll just be in the masses. Last thing. You saw the RNC last night.
Yes.
You saw President Trump's speech.
I did.
Would it not be, I mean, I know that I got this feeling. I need to know if you got this feeling. Did you at least for a second picture someday seeing fireworks that said Eric spelled out? Because I really saw JD. I just saw a flash. I said, man, that is the coolest thing I've ever seen in a fireworks display in my entire life. I thought maybe it was special effects for television. And I looked closer. No, wow. they really spelled out Trump 2020. Was it not a great speech? And let me ask you the specific question. Compared to Joe Biden's speech, how was President Trump's acceptance speech last night?
His acceptance speech was perfect. I thought it was phenomenal, but it was not necessarily the focal point of the week. Yeah. And I think they did it well. Just to touch on the RNC. The RNC, I was a week ago, we talked about it on my show. I didn't want to see a virtual RNC. I wanted people together. I think this COVID shit is over. Obviously, you know, you could go out and protest, but then the media is going like, oh, he had people on the White House lawn. Shut up. It's a hoax. It, you know, 99.7% of people recover from it. It's a respiratory illness. The real virus is what's going on in our cities. But the point being is that they had the RNC and they had to do it the format they did. The way they put it together and the themes of it and regular, ordinary folks, David Dorn's widow.
That was the best one of the night, by the way, to me.
Madison Cawthorn standing
up. Stud. We're trying to get him on the show.
One powerful moment after the other. So Donald Trump, as president and graciously accepting the nomination, he did a great job and it capped off a great week. But it wasn't the focal point of the week. It was the people that were giving the speeches. And it's so diametrically opposed to what you saw with the DNC. You know, yeah, Billy Porter singing just some god-awful rendition of For What It's Worth. And Billie Eilish, some 18-year-old, you know, who looks like she sells meth at the gas station, telling you that this country is terrible because of Trump. And then to have such a powerful, it was uplifting. My morale is lifted. And you talk to conservatives, there has been a shift. And interestingly enough, you have the DNC last week. They don't touch on the riots. They don't mention them. They don't say anything. They build it up. You know, when they were doing the For What It's Worth, when Billy Porter is sashaying around in his little getup and Stephen Stills is playing guitar, they have this montage in the background of people protesting, holding signs and like outrage and uprising. And it's a good thing because this is a revolution, ignoring the fact that it's violent and it's destroying this country. And the whole theme this week was look at what the left is doing. And the polls have turned where COVID is no longer the top election issue. It's now safety. And guess what? Even though Facebook virtue signaling, Subaru driving suburban moms who will go hashtag BLM, at the end of the day, they like to be safe in their nice communities. So that's now the issue. And you see quickly that Biden and his camp's trying to glom onto it, but it's too little too late. So I think Trump gave a great speech, but I think the highlight of the convention was the convention itself. It was really well done.
Love it. Well, I don't know if you read my article, but I actually said almost those exact words. Not like you said it, but I said my only fear going into day four was that day one through three were so fantastic because of the humanity aspect of it, the people that were involved.
Yes.
You know, just like you said, I mean, these people were touching. Okay. Even look, I don't know if you saw, what's her name? The other sister should know her name. This is terrible. Tiffany Trump.
Oh, yeah. Tiffany. Yeah. She doesn't speak a lot, but she's got a lot. She's a very intelligent, young lady. She's in law school.
She just graduated. Yeah.
She did. I didn't know that. Well, she did. A barred lawyer.
Yeah, she just graduated. I don't know if she's taken her exam yet, but she graduated.
Is it too late to talk her out?
No, I'm sure she's unlike us. If we were to get our law degrees today, then we would have a very difficult time out there. She's not going to have a hard time at all. She can land on either side of the fence doing whatever she wants to do. But the thing that I loved about it, she was talking about the propaganda in mainstream media and in big tech. And it's something that you didn't see anybody else really talking about nearly as much. I thought that was very, very telling that it was the president's daughter who goes after that versus like Ivanka's opening. I'll admit, I thought, man, she's running. She's running in 2022, 24, 26, 28, sometime soon, because you don't go out there and start listing out your credentials and your accomplishments if you're not going to be running. You know, if you're just an advisor and you're going to go back to private life in 4 years, no, I think she's running for office in 2022 would be my guess. Even though she has a young child, she has a young child and a very, very good family that knows how to raise children. So I think she'll be fine. I think she's running, and I'm not a big fan of hers. I think she's got a good heart. I'm not a big fan of her politics, but that's a whole other discussion. Any final points before I let you go? I asked you for 10 minutes. You gave me like 7 hours. This has been great. Any final points before I let you go though?
You know, I just, I think the tide has turned and I think we can feel it palpable. You can feel it in the air. Everywhere I go, and I'm an unabashed, very open Trump supporter. I wear my Trump hats, my stuff out in public. I have never had anybody say anything negative. I always get very quiet. Someone looks over the shoulder, go, "Hey man, I like your hat." I get that all the time. I got a Trump sign in my yard. I was out the other morning. I was going to my car, and a FedEx driver is driving by, and he honks and he gives me a thumbs up and like nodding to me. I thought, does he know me from another delivery? And I look at what he's motioning to. He's motioning to my Trump sign in my yard. And here's a FedEx delivery driver. Like every the country, we're ready to do it, man. We're ready to reelect this guy, and we're gonna do it. We're gonna reelect him, and we better be ready for what is going to come, because they're not going to go down without a fight. And Kamala Harris is 100% right. It is not going to end, and we need to be ready for it.
We do. We do. Eric Matheny, thank you so much for joining me. Everybody go to, on Saturdays at noon Eastern, go to Periscope, go to, you can go to Freedom First Network. I forgot to tell you this. I've got to tell you live. We're going to start putting the shows as they're live at the top of the, website at freedomfirstnetwork.com. So it just makes it an easier place. So whether people are on Facebook, Twitter, whatever, they can always find us. So we're going to be putting the Periscope video, embedding it directly once the show goes live every Saturday at noon, freedomfirstnetwork.com. If I miss it, then you can find it on Eric's Twitter account and or Bob's or Rampage Rants. Those are the new third wheel. I hope that from what I've seen, he's going to be an awesome addition to the show. Brother, it has been an honor and a blessing. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you, JD.
Take care.
You will.